Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
In our 670 The Score studios, Jordan Malley.
Shout out to Jordan Malley.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't. No.
No.
I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, you're going to make it happen.
And Matt, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls, 5 days a week.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Matt Peck, also host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago, following all 82 Bulls games this season. You can follow me on Twitter at Bulls_Peck. You can follow my co-host Jordan Malley at Jordan C. Malley. You can follow us at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Shoot us an email, lockedonbulls@gmail.com. And of course, that text and voicemail line is always there for you. 331-979-1369 is the number. We'll probably be doing some mailbag content tomorrow on Friday's show to steer y'all into the weekend. I know we got a couple of new voicemails to get to, a lot of text messages. So if you haven't sent yours in already, get on it. 331-979-1369. Very excited to share today's episode with y'all. This is an interview that a lot of you have been requesting from us over the last 2+ years that Jordan and I have been doing this show, as we've welcomed in a variety of people who cover the Bulls and the NBA. And this was the white whale that we were still trying to get, and I ran into him in the media room at the UC about a week ago. We had a great chat, and I said, we got to get you on Locked On Bulls, man. And he said, hey, let's do it. So without further ado, I give you Locked On Bulls and my conversation with Joe Cowley.
If you build it, they will come, Joel. Seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome in a guest to Locked On Bulls. He's somebody that our listeners have been asking for a while now. We are very happy to finally deliver on that request. He is Joe Cowley. He covers the Bulls for the Chicago Sun-Times. Follow him on Twitter at @JCowleyHoops. Joe, welcome to Locked On Bulls, man. Pleasure to finally have you on board.
Oh, no problem. Good to be here, man.
So let's dive right in with the Bulls' most recent disappointing loss to the Minnesota Timberwolves Wednesday night. They get another healthy piece back into their rotation. Lauri Markkanen returning after more than a month-long absence with that strangely defined pelvis injury. His first stretch in the first quarter didn't go all that well, but he had a nice run in the second quarter where he looked aggressive offensively, knocked down a couple of threes in addition to getting some points inside. You had some comments recently on your 670 The Score interview that raised some alarms and some eyebrows about Lowry and his emotional state this season, which has been a pretty difficult one. And then he had some interesting comments post-game last night that sounded like pointed comments at his head coach, Jim Boylan, about wanting to prove in these final 20 games that he can be more than just a spot-up shooter. What were your thoughts on his return last night, and do you think that he will have any opportunity to be a little less depressed in these final 20 games?
You know, I mean, look, here's the thing with him. He came into the season with a lot of promise. I mean, this is a guy that was a pillar of this foundational rebuild. He was a guy that they deemed, you know, the 1-2 with he and Zach LaVine. And he hasn't delivered. Now you have to get into the details of why hasn't he delivered. First of all, I don't think he liked his role in this offense and what they wanted from him. If you look at his game, he likes some mid-range. He likes some fades in the paint, kind of with that Dirk little late kick. He likes having the ball in his hand, something that they went back and watched the film on before last season and saw that he was doing in Finland because of his athleticism. I mean, he's a good athlete. You know, I mean, that's the thing that people don't get to see. Sometimes what we get to see late in practices, we'll come in and guys, they'll be goofing around and, doing dunks and between the leg type stuff. And you see Lowry with his ball handling skills and with his athletic ability for a 7-footer. There's a reason he put up those numbers in February, last February, because he's a hell of an athlete. And I think he kind of felt like that was being squashed. I don't think he liked the system. I don't think he's alone. I think a lot of guys, I mean, Kobe White's complained about, you know, that he's got a mid-range game that's kind of been taken away from him. Zach LaVine's complained that his mid-range game has been somewhat taken away from him. And those guys understand the importance of that mid-range, especially come playoff time where teams run you off the three-point line and guard the rim. And basically that whole in-between area is there for you to kill teams. And if you're not used to doing it, or you, it's been taken out of your what you did in the regular season, you know, it hurts. And most guys realize that. So I think right away, Lowry did not like his role in the offense as the season went on. You know, I think it was easy for him to kind of check out and say, yeah, you know, ankle's not great. Yeah, pelvis isn't great. And so I definitely think that's something they need to watch moving forward. Look, they have control over this guy for the next, you know, 4 years probably. So it isn't like he can just say, okay, I'm leaving. But I still think if nothing changes, which I don't think is going to be the outcome, but if nothing were to change, or if he's soured enough, I would not be surprised that when he can go, he goes. And if that even means turning down more money for the Bulls to go elsewhere, where he's comfortable and he's running with the guys that he feels like understand his skill set, you know, he'll do so. And the other thing, too, to watch, it's not just a Jim Boylan thing, or it's not an analytics thing. He and Zach are yet to have sustained playing together success. We still haven't seen that. And his best moments are when Chris Dunn is running the point and has the ball in his hands and is looking to play make instead of, you know, drive and shoot and do whatever Zach likes to do and go ISO and all that kind of stuff. So, I think that's definitely a storyline to watch. And it's not just a Boylan thing. It's not just an analytics thing. It's a Zach thing. I mean, Zach's got two more years after this season. What do they do with him? If they ink him long term, does that change what Lowry wants to do? So, you know, he's not happy. He's not thrilled with how this thing has gone, his role in this thing. And, you know, he doesn't need to be a 7-foot Doug McDermott in this offense, because that's basically what he looked like for a couple months. So, you know, that's my feelings on Lowry. Lowry will never come out and publicly say that. It's not the makeup of his culture. It's not the makeup of the man. But we also talk to Lowry a lot off the record, and I don't think there's one beat writer that would say Lowry Markkanen is happy with what's gone on this season.
Because you mentioned that it's not just an analytics thing, a Jim Boylan thing, and not just Lowry, that a lot of guys on this roster are not exactly thrilled with the system right now. You mentioned Kobe White, and he had another solid game last night, 26-6 off the bench, and he was only 2 of 7 from downtown. A lot of his production came. Yeah, he got to the rim a few times, but he was knocking down a lot of mid-range shots last night.
Right.
We've also seen Zach LaVine do a little bit more of that recently, to say, look, to hell with this. If I got a mid-range shot, I'm going to take it because I know I can knock him down. And that was very much a strength of Kobe's game, his 1 year at UNC. Do you think that is more of Jim Boylan easing up on his like bare-boned analytics for dummies strategy offensively this season? Or do you think that is more a defiance of some players to say, I'm going to go out there and do my own thing?
I mean, I think there's some guys doing their own thing. I don't think it's defiance. I think it's kind of what is being given to them and what the defense is given. And, you know, Jim or the analytics department, the coaching staff, they're not going to get on guys for taking good shots. You know, it's more of, hey, this is what we want. This is what we want in the shot clock. We don't want early mid-range in the shot clock. We don't want long mid-range in the shot clock. You know, this is what we're looking for. And I get it. I mean, I understand the math. I think people think that I'm, you know, an idiot and don't understand the math that 3 is more than 2. I get it. But when you don't have a team that is a traditionally good three-point shooting team and you're trying to put that square peg in a round hole, you piss off a lot of guys. You isolate a lot of what their skill set is or what they deem their skill set is. And, you know, I understand analytics. I understand the importance of analytics. I don't live and die and swallow analytics like a lot of people do. And to me, that's kind of been the downfall of the NBA right now. If you look at some of the poor play and some of the poor numbers, you have so many teams that it's a copycat league. I get it. But you don't have Klay Thompson. You don't have Steph Curry. You don't have Draymond Green. Just because they did it, you don't have Kevin Durant. Just because they did it and were so good at it, those are Hall of Fame guys doing what their strength is. And so I think there's a lot of teams like, I mean, look at the Timberwolves yesterday. I mean, they have that same mentality. It's just feast or famine from three. Attack the rim or shoot the three. And it's horseshit basketball. Are we allowed to swear on this thing?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. It's horseshit basketball come playoff time. It's percolating down to the college level and to the high school level. And it's unwatchable on a lot of nights at those levels because you have terrible shooting. You have, you know, guys that don't understand exactly drive and kick and you know, they still have that, I got to get my DNA when, and they've got that, you know, kind of, you know, into their system where they're like, yeah, I just got to get mine. And so, you know, it's a dangerous thing that the NBA is doing right now. It's kind of what baseball did, where you just paint by the numbers and manager be damned, coach be damned, our analytics department, our guys from Yale are smarter than the guys that have been around on the court for 20 some years. And the product, I think, has suffered. And unfortunately, I think the Bulls are getting caught up in that. And so I applaud guys like Zach and Kobe going off script and saying, you know, look, there's a big hole between rim protector and the guy that I just cooked on the outside who was trying to run me off the three. And I'm going to take advantage of that, whether it's the float game that Denzel likes to do or whether it's just pull up from 12, 13 feet. I'm going to do that because that's the smart play. So, you know, I think we're seeing guys do that. I don't think it's a middle finger to Jim Boylan, but I definitely think it's a middle finger to a league that is falling in love with taking a fundamental, a solid part of the game out of it and ignoring the fact that, you know, guys like CJ McCollum, guys like Kawhi, I mean, you go back to the playoffs last year, there's some mid-range guys. Now, obviously, Kawhi is a different animal. I mean, he's just a freak of nature from mid-range. But they're forgetting the importance of that shot and how lethal it could be, especially in a seven-game series where teams are hell-bent on taking out threes and rim protecting. So, you know, I love it. I love the fact these guys are, you know, doing that and getting off on it. So, you know, I hope it continues.
I'm glad you just mentioned the Denzel floater a moment ago, because that's where I wanted to go next. We've seen Denzel come back into the fold after his recent, it was a hamstring. He knocked down a couple floaters last night. I'm curious to get your thoughts on this entire saga of Denzel and Jim Boylan this season, because, I mean, we're talking about, as you mentioned, this team with this offensive system that is so obsessed with the new NBA's idea of shots at the rim and threes. And Boylan seems to be trying to do things regardless of the personnel at his availability this season, which I think is one of the biggest frustrations of the fan base this season. Denzel is one of the few knockdown three-point shooters you actually have on your roster. And when he was healthy earlier this season, he was getting DNP coaches' decisions night in and night out.
Right.
What do you make of what went wrong between Jim and Denzel? Because, yeah, maybe Jim was trying to hang his hat on the Bulls improving as a defensive team this season before Wendell and Chris both went down and that went to shit. But yeah, Denzel is not great defensively, but so is most everybody on this roster. So what was it exactly that had Denzel in Jim's doghouse? And what do you make of Denzel's future with this team? Because he's a name that a lot of people thought would be in trade rumors before the deadline, and we heard nothing.
I was shocked that they didn't move him because, you know, look, they're going to let the market set a price on him. And who knows what the market sets on him? He's a system guy. He was a system guy at Michigan State. Shame on Gar Forman for once again saying, we like what we have with him. We feel that he fits into what we want to do. At the same time, they were talking about getting more athletic and running and stuff. And that's just not his game. He's one of those dudes that at 6 years old is going to bust your ass at the YMCA doing the same stuff he's doing now. That's just his thing. And so, you know, I think they misdrafted what they wanted from him. But now he's here, and now you have him, and he actually does take the lid off the basket from deep. And I think Jim just doesn't like him. Doesn't like his game. I don't think it's a good kid, so it's not a personality thing. He's not defiant. He's not, you know, he does whatever he's asked to do. He just doesn't like his game. He's kind of a tweener. He doesn't really have a set position. And I also think when Denzel finally came out about 2 months ago and said he was frustrated in the Sun Times article I did, I mean, his ass went in witness protection for shit. We didn't see him for a couple of weeks. So Jim sent the message that, hey, you know, there's one voice that complains about playing time, and it's the coach. And if you're going to be that other voice, then, you know, you sit there next to big Chris Felicio and talk to him about, you know, the money he's stealing. So, you know, I think that's where they put him in purgatory for a while. And that body count in the training room got so high that you had to dig him out and you had to use him. So, you know, I think he has value in this league. He's one of those guys that's got to go to the right team and they'll find a way to use him. But I'm interested to see what the market will set on his price. I don't think the Bulls will match it unless it's ridiculously low, like kind of what happened with Nico. Nico Meritich had no interest, and the Bulls basically just said, okay, we saw that you had no interest, and this is what we're offering, and he had to take it. I think Denzel, because it's a weak free agent class, it's a good year for Denzel to be a restricted free agent, and we'll see what price he sets. I just don't see them matching it. You know, I mean, just look at the way the roster is built, the two-year window that they designated for this current team, and I just don't see him fitting moving forward. Again, if the market price is so low or there's no interest in him, then they have his ass over a barrel, and then they can say, oh, all right, this is what you're worth. The NBA didn't see you as this. So I like Denzel. I think he's a good dude. I think he does have value. He just doesn't have value in this team with this system, with this coach. Now, if they make a coaching change, they may have a whole different feel of, you know, if they bring in a GM, he has a different voice, sees different things, he'd be like, yeah, I like this guy's game off the bench, and we're going to keep him, and this is the price we're going to keep him at. So all things are fluid on that, but if nothing changes, no, Denzel, he's walked.
We're talking with Joe Cowley, who covers the Bulls beat for the Chicago Sun-Times here on the Locked On Bulls podcast. Follow Joe on Twitter at @JCowleyHoops. Joe, because we're talking about Denzel, the decision facing him and the Bulls as far as their mutual or not mutual future, let's go to the other guy who's got a restricted free agency ahead of him in just a couple of months, and that's Chris Dunn, who is confirmed now what was believed to be the MCL that would keep him out for the remainder of the season. That was confirmed by Jim Boylan earlier this week. He got a lot of credit for, you know, embracing his role as a bench guard who would put an emphasis on the defensive end. And, you know, they showered him with praise for being among the league leaders in steals and steals per game and really creating a lot of that disruptiveness that led to the Bulls' transition opportunities this season. Now, with the season-ending injury and the weird up-and-down season he's had, the weird, basically the entirety of his tenure here since the Jimmy trade, can't really stay healthy, has had some moments. You mentioned him having more chemistry with Lowry than, say, Zach LaVine, but right now Zach LaVine, based on production and contract, is this team's most valuable piece. And because he's going to miss the remainder of the season, Dunn's qualifying offer is going to take a substantial hit. Do you see the Bulls and Dunn finding some kind of mutual ground this offseason where they might match whatever modest offers he's going to get in a pretty, as you said, a pretty weak free agent class?
Yeah, again, I mean, if there's a coaching change because of an office, you know, facelift that's coming, is this guy an offensive-minded guy who sees no value in what Chris Dunn does? Or do they stick with Jim Boylan, who has kind of built this identity around Chris Dunn? I mean, that's the big question that has to be asked, and that then you get your answer as far as his future with the Bulls. I can't see them saying, look, this is what we want to be, this kind of three-guard attack with Levine and Satoransky and Dunn, like they ended up settling and where that defense kind of became top 10. It was built around Chris Dunn being disruptive on the ball. And I can't see them saying, okay, we can keep Jim Boylan, have this identity as this defensive team that gets our hands on the ball, deflects, runs after we deflect, and but we're going to do it without Chris Dunn. And it just doesn't work. So there is a fear that there, because they've already gauged that there is interest on him. You know, Doc Rivers has kind of been a big Chris Dunn supporter and fan for a couple seasons now. And his value in what he does is kind of that sixth guy that, or seventh guy that comes off the bench, or that second unit guy that keeps the defense going that Doc likes to play. And so they'll have to monitor that situation and see what's the price Doc's willing to pay. I think the Bulls, obviously the injury changes things. I think before he was injured, I think they deemed him, yes, if it's a $9 to $10 million a year offer, we'll match it. Anything more than that, you know, thanks, Chris Dunn. Thanks for playing. They would let him walk. So I think, but again, it's all kind of fluid on what happens with the coach. I mean, if they bring an offensive-minded coach or an analytics GM that deems offense value way more than defense, you know, Chris Dunn has no value to what the modern NBA game. I mean, can't. You know, he doesn't knock down corner threes. He doesn't, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things he's a liability offensively. And he has better value coming off the bench for a team, giving him that 20 minutes. And if he's a dog and he's into a guy and he's bothering another team's offense, you ride him out, you know, to that 25 to 30 minute mark. I mean, that's what he is. It's just a matter of do the Bulls see him? That fits with what they want to do or what the new coach wants to do or new GM wants to do, or if they're running everything out there the same, they have to pay. And like I said, you know, I've been told by a couple people that 10 million a year threshold is max, is it, as far as what they would match. And then after that, they would let him walk.
Because, you know, you're talking about the fact that some of these decisions about whether or not to keep or move on from Denzel or Chris will largely be dependent upon the future of Jim Boylan and whether or not the Bulls want to double down and continue to try to make this work with him, or perhaps with the addition of some new voices to the front office going a different direction, and that might dictate some of the personnel decisions as far as the roster is concerned. We could get to the front office rumors in a second, but sort of okay. Attached to those front office rumors is the Bulls fans' quandary of, like, what the hell is Doug Collins to this entire brain trust? Because our mutual friend Casey Johnson, in his mailbag column earlier today, mentioned something that I had not yet heard, which is that Doug Collins and Jim Boylan have now had a falling out. You, in one of your recent pieces of work, mentioned the fact that Doug was never a fan of the Fred Hoiberg hire, and that's why he has kind of never been impressed with Gar and his abilities as a GM. So it's like, well, Doug didn't like Fred, and now Doug and Jim have had a falling out. Can you confirm those reports that Doug and Jim are on the outs? And if they do, in fact, have some kind of new voice added to this front office, what will be Doug Collins' role in all of this? It's like the Bobs from Office Space. Bulls fans want to know, like, what would you say you do here?
I mean, the whole Doug Collins thing to me is to me, he took the job so he can be an assistant coach at Northwestern. That's really when I think of the Doug Collins situation, yeah, he bounced things off people. Yeah, he did have a loud voice early on with the whole Gar Foreman situation in the wake of the Bobby Portis, Nikola Mirotic fight. He blamed that directly on Fred Hoiberg, and that meant indirectly blaming it on Gar Foreman because that was Gar's big hire. That was the guy he was recruiting a year before they sabotaged Thibodeau. So, you know, they were all about Fred, and Gar was the face of that hire. So that immediately soured that relationship. I wouldn't say Jim and Doug are on the outs. The relationship is not what it was. Even up to a couple months ago, I will say that. So, I mean, there is accuracy in that, and again, some of it is Jim knows who he needs to talk to, who he needs to please. I mean, he's been here for a year now. And when you're in a culture of, where surviving is key over winning, you become adept to it too. And I think Jim understands, okay, I need to let Michael know what my mindset is and what I plan, Michael Reinsdorf. I need to let, you know, Jerry's not around, so you can't even say Jerry. And I need to know what, you know, my communication with John needed to be strong. And that's it. Gar's out of the picture now. There's no ass kissing for Gar anymore. You know, Doug has a voice. He bounces things off people, but he's not a decision maker. He doesn't get to make decisions. So do I need to really go by Doug every other day and say, hey, what do you think, coach, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'd rather have Rudy Tomanovich in my camp and in the Advocate Center than have to worry about appeasing Doug Collins. So I think that's more of Jim's mindset. So, I mean, has the relationship changed? Oh, without question, it's changed. I just don't think Jim's sweating every night saying, God, I hope Doug's saying good things about me, because his role is not about that. He's a sounding board. He is a guy that says stuff, but they don't, you know, it isn't like if Doug speaks it, it goes into existence. That's not how it works. So, you know, when they did that move, to me, it was kind of like, all right, the guy's free. He's not doing anything. He wants to be in Chicago. He's part of the Jerry Reinsdorf, you know, family, the circle that Jerry likes to do with ambassadors on the baseball side, you know, whether it's Jim Tomey or Frank Thomas or, you know, marching all those guys out there. To me, he's more of just an ambassador. I mean, you know, he's an ambassador with a little more say, and that's about it. I mean, you know, so I'm not too worked up about what Doug Collins has to say or what his role in all of this is. I just don't think there's a lot of people saying, okay, well, we're not making this move if Doug doesn't approve. So, you know, I would probably leave it at that, but definitely the relationship has changed between Jim and Doug. But to me, it's more of Jim just understanding, all right, look, I need to appease these guys and only these guys. And I'm not going to sweat playing politician to Doug Collins.
Joe, you were the first one to break the news while the entire NBA world was here assembled in Chicago for All-Star Weekend, that the Bulls were using that weekend and that week to sort of expand their search, which, you know, is a refreshing change of pace for this organization,
right?
That we're not big on wide-ranging searches. Yeah, well, yeah, that's I think my issue and the issue of a lot of Bulls fans is, what exactly will this search yield? Because the way that you've reported it and the way that others have reported it is, yes, they're looking to add an empowered voice to this front office structure, but however, you know, Gar will still be offered a role to remain in the scouting department. Yeah, he may be stripped of his GM title, but by all intents and purposes, that's already happened a year or two ago, and they've already shifted his focus to almost exclusively scouting. And also, John Paxson is still a very valued voice and a very valued and loyal member of this Bulls, you know, this Bulls family who the Reinsdorfs trust blindly and with such loyalty. So if Gar and John are both still around and maybe they shift around what their roles are, do you see it as a problem with who will be the, you know, the candidates in the pool of people to take this job? Because if I'm a young on the rise executive in a different NBA organization right now, and I'm, you know, somebody rings me up to say, hey, come to the Bulls, we'd love to get you in for an interview, but I've heard these things that Gar's not going anywhere and John's not going anywhere, then why would I want to take that job? What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are, what it, to me, this all falls on Michael Reinsdorf. Is he going to conduct this interview in a room by himself, or is he going to conduct it with John Paxson sitting at the table? And, you know, whether it's actually Gar or a cut up figure of Gar, it's really who gives a shit at this point, because it's really one and the same. It has very little say, and no one cares what it has to say. So that, to me, is the big difference. Is Michael Reinsdorf going to be able to have this interview by himself and say, look, basically, this is the big white whale I want, whether it's Sam Presti or someone like that, and yes, I am turning over everything to you, John Paxson, be damned. Or is John in that room, and then it's a guy like a Shane Battier, or it's one of these agents' names that are floating out there where John still has a say. John's more of like, hey, this is, I'll give you my ideas or what I think, but you're going to make the final decision on stuff. You're going to deal with the media. You know, this is going to be my new title, like special advisor to Michael Reinsdorf, blah, blah, blah. Because then you're not going to land that white whale. And then that changes things completely. Yes, you got a new voice. Yes, you got a new pair of eyes in there that might see things differently. But that's not what Bulls fans want. I'm not saying they want blood. Well, some of them do. I'm not saying they want heads on spears and spigots and stuff like that. Some of them do. But what I'm saying is they want something different. This has gone on way too long. And it's a small group that it's gone on way too long with. It's the same damn voices in the same room patting each other on the ass, telling each other how smart they are. And it's not winning anything. So You know, enough's enough. And I get that frustration that Bulls fans are having. And it's not just Bulls fans. You go around the NBA and there's a bunch of fan bases that are suffering from Stockholm Syndrome, where it's like, hey, the rebuild is more fun than actually winning. And that's what ownership has sold to people. And that's, I mean, like Minnesota, you know, I spent a lot of time up in Minneapolis. There was an article in the Star Tribune from one of their writers, either yesterday or the day before, saying that, yeah, Thibodeau got him to the playoffs and broke the 13-year drought, but it wasn't fun. So, and it wasn't sustainable. So it's, this is refreshing. 19 wins is refreshing compared to the playoffs. That's what I'm talking about with Stockholm Syndrome and fan bases just being like, this is exactly what ownership wants. This is what they've dreamed of for years, where they control the message so much that they've got these sheep coming to the arena to see D'Angelo Russell, getting all excited that they landed at the airport and Big Cat's jumping around because he got his fellow soft, non-defensive player, Buddy, to come and join him in Minnesota. And this is what the media is selling to the fans, and they're licking it up. I at least like the fact that Bulls fans aren't completely all licking it up. Some of them are, but for the most part, they know that this has not worked and they need something different. And if I'm going to spend $500 to take a family of three to go to the one game a year I can afford, I don't want to see this crap anymore. And I'm tired of it. And this Bulls brand has to mean something. Chicago basketball has to be bigger than this and has to mean something. And, you know, we saw that at the All-Star game. I mean, we just saw, watched with Common and that pregame. I mean, that to me was the biggest middle finger to the Bulls the entire weekend. Forget the booing when Zach was trying to talk on First Take or the story that I wrote, Casey Johnson wrote. The biggest middle finger was Common saying, this is what Chicago basketball is all about. This is what's been forgotten. This is what the fan base is numb to now because of this damn organization. I mean, to me, that was the message, you know? And so I definitely think that they have to be, they have to hear what's being said. They have to understand it, and they have to do the right thing. They have to bring in a guy and empower him and say, we want you to be this new voice. We want you to lead this thing in a different direction. And if you want to bounce things off John, he's here, but that's all he's here for, is for you to bounce things off him. This is your baby. You walk this thing. You raise this thing. You nurse this thing. You change its shit diaper. You burp it. You do everything with it, and we have your back. And the problem is, are they going to bring in the right guy to do that, and are they going to empower him that much? And that's the big wait and see in all of this.
Joe, before we let you go, and we appreciate how generous you are with your time, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about you specifically and your career and the role you have covering this team, because I think for as long as you've been on this Bulls beat, you ask questions that maybe some of your colleagues, for whatever reasons they have, don't want to ask or don't feel, don't feel the need to ask. You say things in your columns that you are perhaps, you know, putting yourself out there a little bit more as someone to say, yeah, I'm not afraid to label myself as a guy who is calling out the bullshit for the bullshit that it is. And, you know, relationships with the organization be damned. I'm going to speak what's on my mind. Did you find a specific point? And I know that, you've had a long, very successful career as a journalist in the world of sports media. Do you take pride in that specific role and serving that role? Is it something that you've always wanted to be or do, or is it just sort of something that has come naturally to you?
No, I mean, well, you kind of got to naturally be a dick. I mean, that just comes with the job. I mean, but here, the way I look, I have a passion for sports. I grew up a huge Steelers fan, a big passion for Steelers football. And my whole thing was I always wanted a team covered the way it should be covered. And, you know, when I first got into journalism, that's how it was. A beat was competitive. It was nasty. It was a bunch of guys being checks and balances for the fan and the voice for the fan. And that's what this is at the end of the day. What has become of the profession is very unfortunate, is you have a lot of fanboys doing the job now, whether it's their blog or they're using their stats to have their voice because they don't have the balls to ask tough questions. So they use their stats to try and go after guys or question the beat writers. But they're not the ones that are, you know, I always talk about, and Casey knows it well enough, where I always talk about, if the beat writer is not out there, if the beat writer is not out there hunting and killing, nobody's eating. I mean, right. You could sit in your basement with your blog and write what you want and get the, and take our quotes and steal our shit and question us and tell us how horseshit we are. But you're eating because I killed it. And you're eating because KC killed it. Otherwise, you have nothing. And if a beat writer is not willing to go out there and defy an organization, and look, my wars with the White Sox are well documented. And I talked about Cowley Island all the time. That is time, you know, I'm going back on Cowley Island with this story, you know, the whole Kenny Ozzie war that was going on. I had that a year before the Chicago Tribune would even acknowledge it. They were trying to paint it the other way, using David Hall as their little puppet to do it. And he, you know, he put the strings up his ass and was a good puppet for him, because he didn't want to put himself out there and ask the tough questions. It's easy to go after the coach because you know he is there to be fired eventually. It's kind of even easier to go after players or a front office guy because they have a shelf life. It's hard to go after ownership. It's hard to go after the billionaire guy because, you know, you're not firing him. He's not going to get fired. And organizations are smart. What they've done is they've learned how to give little morsels to the certain media guys. Hey, here, we're going to do this guy for a 10-day contract. And he's like, and they all of a sudden they start siding with ownership. And you see that in a lot of cities. Minneapolis, everything that's written coming out of Minneapolis is from the eyes and voice of ownership. That's why they turned on Thibodeau. That's why they turned on Jimmy. And they're right back in the shitter because they went back and backed ownership and believed what ownership was saying was the right way. And where are they now? They're back in the lottery. Excuse me. So this profession is about checks and balances for the fan. And asking the questions that the fan wants to know. And, you know, and not all fans want to hear negative stuff. And I think, you know, and that's kind of the balance that I struggle with is, am I always just too negative? Can I come off Cowley Island and go to the resort for a couple of days, and pat Jim Boylan and Paxton on the ass and say, hey, this was a good move you did? Or, you know, it's hard to say, I got to get out of this foxhole and I have to, you know, and it always can't be this fight. So I get it why fans say all I am is negative and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I'm trying to do the right thing for that family, like I said, that has to spend that money to see that one game. And are they getting their true value out of this, or are they being taken advantage of? And, you know, I don't know how I'll be judged for that. I don't care. I've been doing it for so long at this point. It's just that I'm trying to do right by the fan. And the other thing, too, is the eye-opening thing for the Bulls beat for me is we went to Brazil, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago for that preseason game. And I actually got, you know, when you live in Chicago, you know the Bulls are a big deal because there's that statue. And right. As long as that statue's in that atrium, it's a big deal. And you see the people, the tourists and all that stuff around the statue. But you don't get a feel of how big Bulls basketball is until – we went down to Brazil, and it was everywhere. I mean, I even told Michael Reinsdorf one time we were talking. I'm like, you know, you have a global brand, and you guys are treating it like it's freaking Mayberry. And, yeah. You know, if I have a global brand like that, and I'm worth that kind of money for what I paid for it, I'm calling Spoelstra up and saying, bruh, what's it going to take to get you out of Miami? Here's the checkbook. You write the years and the amount. And you come here because I want your brand, your mentality, your style of coaching here. This player, I want you to go out and recruit. Oh, Jimmy Butler, you want to bring this guy? I love that about you, Jimmy Butler. I'm going to embrace that because you want to win here for Chicago. I'm not going, yeah, Jimmy, that's a great idea. Oh, you're going to Europe with Mark Wahlberg? All right, we're going to trade your ass when you least expect it, like they did. I don't have that. And so, you know, I have a problem with a lot of stuff that the teams in this city do, especially Chicago. That's the other thing, too. Being born and raised in Cleveland, you could get away with the shit in Cleveland because they've sold the fan base on more small market, aw shucks team. You can't have three rebuilds going on in Chicago at the same time like they have the last couple of years and fans embracing that and being okay with it. To me, you've killed the fan base then. You've numbed the fan base to the point where they think that's great. and Chicago deserves better than that. And so, you know, that's my whole mentality and stuff. And I'm sure I strayed and you know, I hated Jay Mariotti. I hated everything about him as a coworker and the scummy person he was. So I never want to become a Jay Mariotti, but I like the fact that Jay challenged things. He just became kind of just so in love with himself that he just challenged things just to challenge it. And that's not the right way to do it. So I don't want to go down that slope, but you got to challenge it. We have to be checks and balances for these things. Otherwise they will walk all over an entire fan base, an entire city, and take advantage of everyone. And that's, you know, these guys are way smarter than us. They're billionaires because they're way smarter than us. And so that has to be, you have to be the watchdog for that. And when I can't do it anymore, or I'm tired of doing it, or I don't have the fight to do it anymore, it's time for me to call Chris DeLuca, my sports editor, and say, bruh, either put me on a college beat or let's just break this off, and I'm going to go and just drive Uber for a couple of years and watch my kids grow. So, you know, I mean, that's where I am and everything. I don't know if I'm right. I don't know if I'm wrong. I don't know if that's the right attitude to have, but, you know, fuck it. That's who I am. And that's what, you know, I feel like this job is about. And, you know, I mean, again, I'll let other people judge me or say what they want to say.
Yeah, well, I mean, you certainly have shown that you still have that energy in that fight this season with the way that you've covered this team and you know, put a spotlight on some of their less attractive features. I'm curious, and after this, I'll let you go, about your relationship with Bulls head coach Jim Boylan, because Bulls fans just are forced to listen to his post-game comments night in and night out and hear him say, "We battled," throw his players under the bus. He was particularly angry after their loss last night, you know, talking about a lack of hustle, lack of physicality, and not getting, you know, some key defensive rebounds when he's got, like, you know, four or five guards out there. But perhaps one of his best sound bites all season long came on the heels of one of your questions where you were saying, you know, you guys keep talking about growth plates and this and that, but y'all ain't winning shit. So, like, what's for fans or for anybody to believe that things are going to get better? And you know, Jim looks to you and says, "If you build it, they will come." You seen that movie, Joe?
Yeah.
What, I mean, is Jim one of the more perplexing head coaches that you've covered in your time as a sports journalist? What has it like been covering him since he took over for Fred?
You know, I get asked this a lot. There's things I really like about Jim. I like, you know, he's not a fake tough guy. He actually is a pretty tough dude. He grew up in a tough environment. You know, I did a big story about how basically his father, you know, was not a good guy. And you know, his brothers raised him and raised him tough. And so there's things about him that I do like personally. But people don't, at the end of the day, people don't care about that. They care about what that win-loss record is. Has he made missteps? Without question, he's made many, many missteps. Do I think he's a legit NBA coach? Here's how I look at NBA coaches. There's five or six elite ones. There's three or four bad ones. And then there's everybody else. And whether people want to put Jim in everybody else or the three or four bad ones, that's up to them. I think he was given orders by the front office of, this is what we want you to do. And he's tried to do those to the best of his ability. Build an identity, which I think he's tried to build an identity, a defensive-minded identity. Get these guys to play hard. And I think they do play hard. I'm anxious to see if they start tuning them out the last 20 games, because do they start seeing the writing on the wall and saying, this dude ain't going to be here next year. There's all this talk about new front office. We're not. Doing suicide sprints and all this shit because he wants to get back to this kind of boot camp mentality.
Hashtag run laps with us, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there are things I do like about Jim. And here's the, I will share this inside conversation I had with Jim. So, you know, after he's asked tough questions, he'll grab a reporter and pull him aside and say, hey, you know, not saying why'd you do that, but more of, you know, what were you trying to get with that? So he just wants to know if you're on the same page with him or if you're, you know, just. And so I remember one time it was earlier this year, he didn't like something I asked him. So he pulled me aside and I said, Jim, let me just say this, Jim. Last year when you came aboard, you said you were different you are going to have tough conversations with these guys. They have to man up and accept it. You cannot then come to me as a reporter and be a hypocrite and say you don't want tough questions or you don't want to have tough conversations. That's the job. And he, you know, if your own words are being used against you, how are you going to get pissed at me? You can't say one thing and expect another. And so we had that conversation early on. I think there was a mutual respect that I'm going to call you out on stuff. I'm going to ask you hard questions. And I know Darnell, you know, Darnell always jokes that if there's a hard question, have Collie ask it because he'll answer it. But I think it's because Jim and I had that conversation where, Jim, these are what you expected of your players. You can't say, well, I don't want to have tough conversations, but I want to have tough conversations with my players, but not with the media. And so I think he understood that. We have common ground on that. There's a mutual respect there for what he does. I always side with coaches first. That's been my history because those are the guys taking the most advantage of by ownership. At the end of the day, those are the guys that are going to be the scapegoats. Those are the guys that are going to lose the most sleep. Those are the guys, and that's the gig. I get it. But, and those are the guys that are going to have the narrative spun on them when they exit the door. And so I always probably side a bit more with coaches or manager because those are the guys that the organization is going to lie the most about. And so I think that chair, that seat has been so cheapened in baseball and is being cheapened in the NBA as far as the importance of it, that you have to kind of play watchdog with that seat first. And again, that's just my thing. Some guys, I mean, look, Oj and Sharms, they've made careers out of sucking up to agents. Those are the guys that they're watchdogs for. And they're making millions of dollars doing it. God bless. I don't find agents, I find them somewhat scummy. I don't deal with agents well. And I had some early blow-ups with Scott Boras in my baseball days, and maybe that's what soured me, but there aren't a lot of agents. I just find them very agenda-driven compared to other components in this whole sporting world. So, do I think Jim is a long-term Bulls coach? No. And I think that will be the history of it, that he was a guy that was brought in to kind of toughen up a team that got really soft under Fred Hoiberg. But for people to get so angry at Jim Boylan, and I've said this numerous times, you're yelling at the foreman of the construction site who's just carrying out the blueprints. Get pissed at the architect that hands the blueprints over and says, this is what we want. Now, did he screw up the measurements of some stuff? Absolutely. But this goes all the way up top. This is the architects. This is what they wanted. They didn't think Tom Thibodeau, put it this way, they didn't think things would ever get this bad without Tom Thibodeau. They didn't understand how good and how elite Tom Thibodeau was, and they're still paying for it, and the Timberwolves are still paying for it. And so, you know, that's my I don't know if I answered the Jim Boylan question, you know, but there are things that I do find endearing about him. I like his toughness. I like tough guys. I have, whether I'm a meatball or whatever, I kind of grew up in that kind of family environment, and so I get it. Like I said, I'm always going to give benefit of the doubt to coaches and managers because I think they're the ones that are going to be screwed the most at the end when they're walked out of the office by security and said, you know, we'll send your cardboard box with you. So.
Well, I mean, you've been doing it for a long time, and Bulls fans greatly appreciate it. Calling out hypocrisies when they need to be called out, you know, whether it's, hey, younger and more athletic, and then here's Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo, or Pack to talk about accountability. I like the analogy of the construction site and the foreman. I'm sure that wasn't specifically chosen. No pun intended. Joe, you know, for the record, I love what you say about the fact that, you know, beat writers have to go out there and hunt so that us blog boys like myself, my co-host Jordan, and people like me and my fellow outsiders can eat. You guys give us the content that we need to do what we do. And what you do certainly is more distinguished and more important than what we do. But it's all about, as you said, providing news, providing coverage, and providing insight and accountability that that such a great fan base and such a great support city deserves. So we appreciate that.
I have no issue with bloggers when they work. And you guys, was it the Gene Greco thing? Was that with you?
Yeah. That was him. Talking about not this podcast, but about Bulls Outsiders.
Yeah. I have a problem with that because, I can't remember the last time I saw him out working. You know what I mean? Putting your makeup on and collecting your $1 million check and then doing your little 6 minutes of, this is what I am is working, then sign me up for that. But, I appreciate guys that are out there like you guys are. You guys are trying to find the information. You guys are fact gathering. I don't care if it's a blog or a TV show. If I see people out there working, I have, like guys like Tony from NBC now, formerly of the Score, Tony Gill and Cody, yeah. Some of the younger guys. I embraced those guys early because they went right in there. They didn't bullshit around. They went right in there and asked tough questions and were a part of this thing. There's a lot of seats at the table, this media table, and it's just not the beat writer. So when I say, I'm out there hunting and killing and so people can eat, those people that are eating off of my kill, they know who they are. And it ain't you guys, put it that way. I mean, they know who I'm talking about, and they know who they are, because they're probably the ones that talk about how I'm a big piece of shit most of the time. but they're sending resumes over to the Sun-Times trying to get the same gig that I work my ass off to get. So, there's plenty of seats, and there's plenty of ways to do this thing and make the sausage and all that kind of stuff. So, I respect what you guys are doing. I like the fact that you guys show up out there and are trying to gather information and trying to pick brains and trying to put a product out there that is a different voice and a different way of doing things. But at the end of the day, it's still the same message that, the fan base has to be treated, put on a pedestal, because that's the most important. That's what makes this thing all go around, are the fans. And I think, unfortunately, we're all forgetting that far too often.
Well said, Joe, and we'll leave it right there. We went long. I appreciate you being so generous with your time. He is Joe Cowley. Get all of his amazing coverage covering the Bulls for the Chicago Sun-Times, and also follow him on Twitter at @JCowleyHoops. Joe, our Locked On Bulls listeners have been clamoring for this for a while now, and you more than delivered, as I expected. So thank you so much.
Anytime, brother.
Seen that movie?
He's
in the movie, Joe.
Thanks again so much to Joe Cowley, Bulls beat reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. Again, you can follow him on Twitter at @JCowleyHoops, providing amazing insight in only the way that Joe Cowley can. Covered a lot of bases about some of the players on this team, the future that looms for them, the future that looms for Jim Boylan, this Bulls front office, the entire organizational structure. And at the back end of the interview, what I was most excited to talk about with Joe, and he didn't disappoint, was some of his thoughts on the way he does his job and how he sees the responsibility of sports media and what we need to provide to our dedicated fans here in Chicago and Bulls fans everywhere. Just great stuff. And the few times I've had the pleasure of chatting with Joe, you could tell that the dude is so real. Yes, he does things a little bit differently. He does things in his own way. He might ruffle some feathers, and occasionally he'll put things out there that that maybe some people say, that's a headline. That's a headline just for the sake of being a headline. But the work behind it is always there. And the passion for the work behind it is always there. And that is something that I very much appreciate and respect about Joe. So I hope y'all enjoyed the interview. Hope y'all enjoyed our conversation and Joe's insights. And share it, by all means. If you listen to the interview and you like it, share it with your fellow Bulls fans, because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to speak to truth and get the word out so that we as Bulls Nation can someday finally get the respect that we deserve and get the product and the winning basketball that we once fell in love with and that we have not seen in quite some time. For my co-host, Jordan Malley, for our guest, Joe Cowley, Matt Peck saying thanks so much for listening, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful Thursday. We will talk to you tomorrow with some mailbag content to get you ready for the weekend and Bulls Pacers Friday night. See you, Red. Be good. Peace out.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com